Welcome to Manners and Madness, a Jane Austen and David Lynch podcast. My name is Maya Adkins.
And I'm Christian Cabrera. And today we are covering Miss Austen Regrets.
The end of her life, whereas becoming Jane was the beginning.
The beginning of the Jane Austen we know, allegedly. I'm going to put in yes. Allegedly because, you know, fictionalized for the most part.
Yes.
But a nice little, little bookend on her literary career.
Yeah, I think it was made around the same time as well. Maybe 2008.
Yeah.
But around the same time.
Yeah, right around, like, at the most a year apart.
I will say that I did enjoy this one quite a bit more.
Yes.
But I found it way too overly emotional at the end, and I did not appreciate the buckets of tears that it tried to make me cry.
Yeah, well, I had a different reaction. I was just like angry, and I was like,
well, you don't get that weepy.
I don't get that's yeah, which is like, I don't know, I need to, maybe if I go back to school for psychology, I'll get the textbook definitions, but I've heard anger is not an emotional reaction. It's anger is not an emotion, so who knows what that means for me, but
sure feels like an emotion.
Exactly. Maybe it's the Sagittarius in me, which I was like, it's, you know,
were you mad at the sense. Movie or the characters in the movie?
The characters in the movie. I thought the movie, actually, I enjoyed it, and I felt like it was a little bit more true to maybe who we, how, even though it's very little, who we understand as Jane Austen.
Yes, I definitely agree. Definitely. I definitely enjoyed it much more in general. And I did get a little annoyed at the end when it was just like a super, let's just yank at those heartstrings as hard as we can and try to, to make it seem as terrible as possible, because, you know, it was the same thing that I said in the last movie. Like, let's not turn her life into a tragedy.
Right. Yeah. I mean, can't people just, like, live their lives and, you know, maybe some bad things happen, but that's kind of everyone's life.
Yeah. I thought they were doing a really good job of it up until we got to the end, and it was like, I mean, I know it's called Miss Austen Regrets, so, but there's a little too much regretting, it felt like.
Yeah, well, you know, we'll get to my specific thoughts on probably every specific character that I'm mad at towards the end of the movie, but like I was like, you know what, it makes sense that she's not reacting as like a fellow Sagittarius. It's makes sense that she's not reacting in the way that I would, because she is dying, but she probably doesn't have the energy to be as angry as I am.
Right.
But
well, and she deflects all of her emotions into humor.
Exactly. But yeah, I what I really loved about this movie, this version of Jane Austen, which is something we talked about in the last version that we didn't really get really any of, was how flirtatious she was with everyone.
Yes.
Yeah, it was just like that makes so much sense to me, just based on her books and how, like, you know, funny she is. Like, yeah, why wouldn't she be, like, you know, ribbing everyone and, you know, just having a fun time all the time, because she just doesn't seem to care about, like, certain rules of society.
Yeah, definitely. I did do a little bit of looking things up while I was watching it, because I was wondering about some of the stuff we had talked about the last time, which I definitely got a couple things incorrect, which, you know, is par for the course, considering I have not a great memory. So it's surprising how much I actually can remember about Jane Austen's life. But Henry and Eliza, we had been talking about them, and Eliza did die a few years before Jane Austen died. So, and I guess it wasn't Henry who provided Jane with the cabin that she lived in. He was supposedly her favorite brother. But that kind of made sense in this movie, because, you know, we got to see which brother, and apparently, I guess, this brother, the rich brother, was kind of like given to another family at a certain young, a rich relation, you know, at a certain young age, so that he could become the inheritor of the estate, mm-hmm. which I guess was the lawsuit stuff they were talking about in the movie.
Yeah, I was like, that didn't seem to work out in the way they thought it would. But
yeah. And then she did have other brothers as well, besides just George, who had some sort of developmental disorder and was not really raised by the family. And I think she had another brother as well.
Yeah. I think it's definitely the ones that the siblings that make an appearance in this movie are the ones that were more active and more, probably more prevalent to her life, and probably the ones that she took inspiration from for her books.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I was just thinking. Oh, well, before we get into it, you watched it on BritBox, right?
I did.
Because I didn't get BritBox just because I happened to own this movie.
Of course.
Because I own all three awesome things. But I was just wondering, did you happen to look through and see if there was any Jane Austen stuff on there that looked promising for future episodes?
I did not look thoroughly, but you know how, like, if you're looking at on a streaming service, whatever you're going to watch, like the page for it, and there's like a related section. I mean, there was like, I went down to it and just kind of kept scrolling to the right, and it was all sorts of Mansfield Parks and, you know, all sorts of Jane Austen related things that I was like, oh, I wonder if any of these are ones we've covered or are on our list even. So definitely we'll have to do a more thorough search and see, you know, maybe there's some stuff on there that we can do that we have on our list.
Because I think we're going to have to do a little BritBox mini season after.
That'd be fun.
We do Lucky.
Definitely. Well, I'm excited to utilize BritBox. I'm not the only series that I've ever like searched for that I couldn't find on anything else was Toast of London, like a Matt Berry series.
Did you? And
I did, and it's on BritBox, which I'm very excited about. So I'll have to watch that, but that's been like the only thing that I've looked for and couldn't find elsewhere. So I'm interested to see what BritBox has that maybe is interesting to me that I'm like, oh, I would like to watch that.
Yeah. Not to be a BritBox salesperson or
anything. Well, I've definitely been interested in it for a while, and I was like, this is just the perfect opportunity to just sign up for it.
Yeah. It has all of classic Doctor Who on there too, which appeals to me, but I haven't done like a Doctor Who rewatch in a while, but I keep feeling like, oh, maybe someday.
Well, maybe we could, because is the new season going to have Jinx Monsoon on it?
Yeah.
So maybe we could, you know, maybe that's what'll like hook me in, and I'll be like,
oh yeah, it's
I'll
a new doctor, a always a perfect time to start.
Exactly. So I'll give it a shot when that season comes out.
Oh, good, because it's on Disney too, so it'll be easy to see.
Yeah, I'll give it a shot and see if it hooks me, because I think I tried a long time ago when I was a teenager, and I can't remember who the doctor was then, but I don't even think it was just the doctor. I just think the show, for some reason, when I was a teenager, it just didn't grab me. It didn't hook me. So I was just like, I don't really care about this right now. So it's been a while. I'll give it a shot.
Yeah. I feel like it's one of those shows that you can bounce off of really easily. But then once you're hooked, you're like, oh, let me go back and watch that thing that I originally didn't like, but now I love.
Oh, 100%. There's so many things, music-wise and all sorts of stuff where you're like, I was definitely being influenced by, you know, teenaged prejudice towards things where it's like, I feel so strongly about this one thing that everything else that is like it or not up to its snuff is garbage.
That feels like a Sagittarius thing to me.
Oh, yeah. Well, and I was just I was so angsty, and everything around me needed to reflect that, so all of my music had to be so emotional and angsty, and everything I watch and wore, and you know, I had to reflect myself at everything apart.
Yes, well, that's a teenager thing.
Exactly.
Oh, okay. Well, again, we're doing this one pretty close to the last one, so I don't really have a lot to just chit chat about. I feel like I've already said everything.
Well, I did start watching a new TV show.
Oh, you did?
Yes, on Netflix, since we have it for another month. Might as well just fit in all I can on there, but I started watching The Gentlemen. I think is a newer series with Theo James, Sanditon alumni.
Oh.
But it's really good. I'm actually really enjoying it. I'm enjoying it more than I thought it would, because I haven't really heard much about it through, like, you know, other people who watch shows and stuff. But over, like, quick overview that doesn't give anything away. It's about this, like, family who, I guess, like, the father was, like, he's, like, a baron or something. And he, or maybe is he a duke? I can't remember. He's British nobility, basically. And they have this big estate, and, like, you know, the father is ill, and, you know, it kind of goes through, like, the next steps of, you know, when he dies. And this isn't giving anything away, because it's, like, within the first 10 minutes he dies. But kind of, like, where it goes, and, you know, obviously family drama, and then maybe some, you know, secrets are, you know, come bubbling to the surface of, how is this estate making its money to support itself? So it's very interesting, and it's very good, and it's got, you know, Theo James, who's really great in it, and Kaya Scolaudero, who I know from the British version of Degrassi called Skins.
Okay.
Which, do you know what Degrassi is?
Wasn't it a Disney show?
it wasn't Disney. It was Canadian TV.
Oh, but right.
It got really, I think there was an American version that just was like a meh. Maybe, I didn't really watch it too much, but basically it was like a teenage soap opera.
Oh, okay.
And Skins was like a British teenage style. but it was like very much like these teens, and they're going out partying and doing drugs and getting into crazy situations being teens, and it's so dramatic. And I just,
well,
I know
my
her
day
from that.
90210 was that show.
it's all, you know, regurgitation of like a style of teenage soap opera. But she was from, that's where I knew her from first, and she was kind of like the it girl at the time. Everyone like on Tumblr was like, I'm gonna look like her, because she was just so like, you know, angsty, emo-y, whatever. Uh-huh. You'll definitely recognize her. I think she was like maybe in those Maze Runner movies.
I can't remember.
But she's been in a lot of stuff. You'd recognize her.
Okay.
That's got a good cast. And I'm really enjoying it.
I didn't start watching, but I discovered yesterday that The Three-Body Problem is not just on Netflix, that there is a version on Amazon. I think it's a...
What?
It might be a Chinese version. It's definitely...
Oh.
Another country's version, because it's got like one season and it covers all the books, but it's like 50 episodes.
Interesting. Was The Three-Body Problem, was it originally like an American or English author?
No, it was a Chinese author.
Right.
And everyone in it was Chinese originally, I believe.
Okay. That's what I thought. And then I thought maybe it had been translated into English to be, you know, reproduced to sell or whatever, but that sounds correct. Interesting. I wonder how that version stacks up to the Netflix version.
I don't know. I haven't watched it yet, but I did. How I found out about it was a friend of mine on Facebook did a post about it that was saying that it was really interesting and cool to watch both of them and see how they both interpret it differently. And it's just from last year, so
interesting.
You know, it's recent.
Interesting. It's always so weird when multiple streaming services do the same thing around the same time, but just in different ways like that.
Well, I don't even know if Amazon did it or if they just bought it from another company, you know, in the way that they do.
Yes.
But I would think with it being on Netflix that they would be like, oh, we've got our own version, but I wouldn't have known about it had my friend not posted about it.
I've not heard about it, but that's very interesting.
It's just called Three Body.
Three Body. There's no problem. We know it's just three.
So, do we have any news
first impression?
Facts?
No. notes.
We already did first impression. Notes. That's the word.
We do. Just, you know, some light notage. I was looking through the trivia, and literally every single thing is like, that gown in this scene was actually worn in this other Jane Austen thing, and then this gown and this shawl were actually worn in this other thing.
Well, the girl was in, she was Jane Fairfax in, was it the Emma we just watched, the Kate Beckinsale one, or Wasn't she? She was definitely Jane Fairfax. And
let's see. She loves playing Janes.
I think it was in the Kate Beckinsale, Emma.
The 90s? Let's see. Was it 95?
96, I think.
Yes, you're correct. That's so funny.
Yeah, the both of our... I guess it wasn't Jane. It was Cassandra, and the other one played Elizabeth. Mm-hmm. But in this one, Jane played Jane.
Jane played Jane, and Jane played Jane. That's so interesting.
But like, well, cool. 10 years earlier.
Right. Well, I liked the look of this one. I feel like this one went for a more realistic look. Like, it wasn't like, not to say it wasn't pretty, but like, it didn't seem like there was like, they were trying to put like a filter on it.
Oh, yeah.
Which I like. Definitely. All right. So it originally came out August 21st, 2007. And then it was directed by Jeremy Lovering and written by Gwyneth Hughes.
It came out... Oh, I guess we maybe didn't do it first impressions, but...
we sort of did.
Like, yeah, we like did. I just didn't say the first time I watched it was with this... Oh, when it came out was part of the masterpiece Jane Austen collection. And it's actually what I have it on is the Sense and Sensibility that they did, which we haven't watched mm-hmm. yet. This was like the bonus disc of that.
Oh, cool.
This movie, yeah.
That's cool. I didn't know that. Well... thank God for Masterpiece.
I know. They need to do another Jane Austen season.
Please. We're overdue.
I guess BBC as well.
And then for our cast, let's see. We have Olivia Williams as Jane Austen.
She was great.
She was really great.
Actually, everyone was great. I'll just say.
Yeah. Yeah, they really were. Well, and there were some familiar faces like Hugh Bonneville, who we'll come to in a minute, but Tom Hiddleston. I was like, oh my God, he's in this. Greta Scacchi, I think that's how you pronounce her name, as Cassandra. Mm-hmm. Imogen Poots as Fanny, who I was like, the whole time, I was like, I know her name from something, but I was looking through her IMDb and I was like, I don't think I've watched anything else she's been in, so I don't know where she's from. So weird. Phyllida Law as Mrs. Austen. Pip Torrens as Edward. Harry Gostelow as Reverend Charles. Tom Hiddleston as Mr. Plumptree.
Yes.
Who I also have a bone to pick with in this movie. Hugh Bonneville as Reverend Brooke Bridges. Let's see. Adrian Edmondson as Henry Austen. Sylvie Herbert as Madame Bijon. It was like a random French lady.
Yeah, she was cool.
She was. Jack Houston as Dr. Charles Hayden, Jason Watkins as Reverend Clark, and Samuel Rukin as Harris Big. I think that's kind of like our main cast.
Yep.
Yeah. And, you know, like I said, the notes are basically all about which clothes have been in other Jane Austen things. So feel free to take a walk through all those yourselves. But yeah, that's
okay. Okay, well, I guess let's just go through it then.
Let's do it.
We kind of start off where our last movie took most place in, which is... young Jane getting proposed to by Harris Big Wither. Ugh.
Can't not be proposed to, apparently.
She's just wrapping men around her fingers left or right.
Well, she does have, like, even from, like, the get-go, you can kind of tell she has this charm about her, which is very, like, I could tell, like, it really, like, ropes people in, and it's like, she can't help but have people kind of be obsessed with her.
Yeah. And it's funny because in Becoming Jane, this was like the kind of like a stand, the red hair guy. And that was kind of like a stand in substitute for this real thing that happened where she accepted one proposal, but then like declined it the next day. And I believe that it was Cassandra who convinced her not to do it, according to what we know or think we know.
Right.
So just interesting that we start with that. The same exact place. Exactly.
Basically right where we left off.
Yeah. And then we move to... what is the next thing that happens?
I'm trying to think. I think... is this when she's going with Fanny?
Oh, yeah. Okay. So, yeah. She's at church. And yes, church, she's church. Living, I guess, close. She's like in a cottage from her brother.
Yes.
Which they don't really explain at all, but, you know, just in case you were wondering.
Right.
She lives in her brother's cottage, very Sense and Sensibility. So that's why they all go to church together, because they're close, I think.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Yes.
But I guess not that close, because she still stays the night with them. Instead of just, like, going to visit and going home.
It's, like, close enough to take a carriage there, but, like, not close enough where it's, like, I can go back home. It's, like, I should probably stay the night.
Yeah. Plus, you know, they love to visit back then, so.
Exactly. Well, and, you know, what else are you going to do in the country?
She is showing off her flirting skills to her niece by flirting with the vicar, and
it's so funny to me.
Is it the vicar? I don't know if that's what they call him in this time period.
I think so.
her niece is like, you know, they have a really fun relationship where she asks her all about dating advice, and, you know, Jane is very funny. They take a carriage to her house. They have a really funny scene where they stop and she's peeing on the side of the road.
Of course.
And Jane is holding up a blanket for her, and I was like, oh, real life.
Right. Relatable.
Yeah. But yeah, they're just having like a really cute little auntie relationship.
She's definitely like the cool kind of more, I don't want to say reckless because it's not to that extent, but she's a little bit more of the looser adult figure in her life. Like, she's the fun aunt. She gets cool to like, she's like, I want to, what'd you say?
Cool imagine. Aunt.
Yes. But she's just like, she wants the approval of Jane. And she also like, in a way, wants to impress Jane to be like, you know, we're the same. And I want you to sign off on everything I do because you're cool. And I want to be like you.
Yeah, exactly. So she goes to visit her. And that's where we meet Tom Hiddleston, who is... I guess the love to be, in theory, the person who she has a crush on and who has a crush on her.
Yes.
There's been no proposals at this point, though.
Right.
And for the first moment, he's very, he puts his foot right in his mouth at the very beginning.
It's not a... not a good idea when you're first meeting someone's family to be like, not to offend you, but...
but could you do this differently?
Yeah, you're kind of ruining society.
Yeah, but he's kind of a not great. I mean, he's not bad, like, you're he's a bad just... man, but he's just like, he's so awkward and he doesn't know how to like ask her to dance when she wants to dance because he's got like some weird moralistic views of dancing after midnight. And
well, because he's like, he's very religious, like very, like not just like Regency religious, he's like ultra religious. And he's just so like such a stick in the mud, like he can't have fun. And and also like it felt like at that I was about to say dinner scene, it was actually probably like a tea scene, but he was like, you know, in a way like trying to like make Jane feel bad for writing vicars as kind of silly fun people in her books, and she's like, they're not real, that's why they're in the book.
You are a case in point of why I write them like this. But
exactly, it's like, she's like, I don't even have to write the jokes, they just write themselves.
Oh, he's about to propose to Fanny, and she's literally just smiling with encouragement, and he's like, you're laughing at me. It walks off into the woods, and it's like, yeah, you don't worry, this doofus.
Well, and yeah, and he like makes comments to Fanny about how he's like, I see you guys laughing at me all the time, and it's like, okay, well, number one, like, Jane laughs at everyone, so it's not just you. Like, she's making fun of everyone all the time.
Learn to laugh at yourself, buddy.
Well, yeah, learn to laugh at yourself and stop being so insecure. Like, that's why you're no fun, because...
And that's why he would not make a good husband.
Exactly. And Fanny, of course, you know, she's a child. She's probably like 18 or something, 17, yeah. But she can't like see that. She just sees like, he's attractive and nice to me. I have to marry him. Yeah. So it's just, you know, she can't see that point yet. So of course her reaction is not so great when it happens towards Jane eventually, but.
We get to that point, and continuing yeah. throughout the entire movie, really, she's like, I don't think I like him, you know, like, exactly. I don't know if I want, that's why she asked her that in the first place, because she didn't know if she wanted to marry him.
Right, which, yeah, in a way, Jane was like, you could tell Jane was like wanting to say like, well, if you want my approval, you probably shouldn't be with him anyway, but I'll go look at him.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, Fanny.
So I think, doesn't she throw a fit at the end or something, and that's why Jane leaves? Or does she just leave because it's time to leave? Oh, well, I guess, actually, no, we're not getting to that yet, because Hugh Bonneville is there, and he is flirting with Jane the whole time and getting very jealous when she is dancing with old men at the dance.
Well, yeah, and I mean, it definitely feels like the type of, I mean, was it even a ball or was it just a party, I guess? Or?
Yeah, it was just like a dinner with dancing at it.
Yeah, it felt like the party that was in Pride and Prejudice, the 2005 version, where it feels very like informal, like we're all dancing these kind of informal dances because we just want to have fun. And there's a lot of energy in the room. Everyone's drinking and everyone's just having a good time. And I really enjoyed the scene because it was just like, you know, everyone, like, you could tell, like, Jane is, like, the life of the party. Everyone wants to dance with Jane because she's, you know, a great dancer, and she wants to have fun.
Exactly.
And she likes doing it. Yeah, exactly. And then that's where we have the weirdness of Tom Hiddleston, Mr. Plumtree, being like, but it's technically Sunday. We can't dance. And she's like, well, I'm going to go to bed. Yeah. Which is something I would have done as a teenager. Been like, well, I'm just going to go to bed then. Leave me alone. And he's... eventually gives in.
And meanwhile, Hugh Bonneville is getting increasingly jealous himself because he's not dancing with her. And then he yells at her that night.
Yeah.
Because she and Fanny are out drinking on the lawn and laughing with each other. And he's like, how dare you be drinking this late? And sends her up to bed and is like, kind of admonishes Jane. And
yeah.
I feel like this whole movie is like, Jane trying to have fun and everyone telling her that she needs to be sad and that she's bad.
Yes. Yes. Well, it's, you know, it's my takeaway from this movie is like, you know, everyone wants something from Jane, and except for Cassandra. Cassandra just wants to be around Jane because she's Cassandra and she's pure. She's the Jane Bennett of real life. Yeah. But
well, it's like Cassandra and Jane are the real love story.
Exactly.
Of her life.
Of course. But yeah, he's just like, you know, he's jealous and he's like trying to like make her feel small because he's like, you're just acting like a silly woman and you're gossiping and, you know, making fun of people and flirting all night. And like trying to also like, it was very a little bit slut shamey about her flirting, which was so like gross. And like, second of all, you're married, so leave her alone. Who cares? And third of all, you're a reverend. So aren't you supposed to not envy your neighbor or whatever?
Well, he was jealous. And at least the next day he does apologize. And I think that we learned at this point that he proposed to her at some point in the past.
Yeah. And she said, no.
And I think also that Fanny was rude to her or something.
Yeah, Fanny ends up
I just
being...
saw it today, Maya.
it's okay. I saw it today too, and I can't. It's going in and out. But she does get mad at her because Mr. Plumtree basically like goes off with someone else. And is going to end up getting engaged to someone else. And she's like, it's just this like really bratty like tantrum she throws where she's like, you just want me to be sad and spinstery like you. She's like, okay, I'm gonna go. you throw your tantrum however you like, you know. Also, like, you know, it's not Jane's fault that he left. And also, you weren't even sure you liked him, so whatever.
Yeah. Okay, so then she goes back home.
Mm-hmm.
We get some nice Cassandra in her.
Yes.
I think that she kind of also immediately goes to visit Henry about her book.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because he's trying to negotiate a better deal for her new publisher, I guess, for yeah. Emma.
Yeah, well, she has Emma finished, and then she wanted, was it Mansfield Park that she wanted to do like a new edition of, but the publisher did not want to do it. And so she's like, can we go to a different publisher right. for Emma? And then she was also like, hey, I also want to make more money.
Yeah.
And then this is where I got even more annoyed. I was like, okay, this is the shitty brother. Because he was like, well, how do you think it makes me look that I can't provide for you and your sister and our mom because you want more money for your book? It's like, okay. And, but then he's like, but also I can't support you because I'm in a lawsuit and I have 11 children.
Oh, that brother. I was thinking we were talking about Henry because...
No.
She went to London, I think, and meets up with Henry, who's negotiating with the book, right?
I think it was the other brother.
Was it?
Yeah.
I thought it was What's Henry, his name? Because that's when Henry gets sick.
No, that's later in the movie. This is...
What am I when she...
It's when she goes to see Edward. So Edward is like...
Edward was Fanny's father. So she was already at Edward's.
Well, then maybe this was towards
so the I end. So I think she had a conversation with him before she went to London, before she left there at all.
Yes, this is... Yes, her conversation with Edward was about like the publisher and wanting to change and then get more money. And then that's when he was like, well... You know, I'm insecure and it makes right. me look bad because I can't provide for you both, even though I can't provide for everyone because my life's in shambles.
Right. Because he's decided got a lawsuit.
I have multiple lawsuits and 11 children and my wife is, I guess she's passed. She's
dead,
but,
I think.
Yeah. I was like, well, who asked you to have 11 children? But whatever. I was like, it's just rude.
Right. Okay. Well, that happened before she left.
Yes.
But that's good context to know that he's like also on the verge of potentially losing a lot of money. And he's the one yes. who basically supports Jane and Cassandra and their mother.
Yes.
Henry, though, is the one who she goes to London to visit. And he's negotiating yes. with the book people because he's a banker and trying to like
yes.
negotiate a better price. But while she's there with him, he is ill. He becomes ill.
Yes. And, you know, typical man where he's like, well, I've been actually sick for a long time, but I don't want to see a doctor for whatever reason. And she's like, well, because I have to do everything.
Probably best.
Well, you know, and of course, you know, another person who needs something from Jade. And she's like, well, I guess I will handle it. I will yeah. save you.
Yeah.
And so go get hot doctor.
She goes to get a hot doctor in the middle of the night at the sad hospital. Quote unquote.
It was like a weird like I was
people
like is
just
this like
sleeping on the floor
just like loud coughing and retching and I was and it was like very stone and dark and yeah. I was like this feels like a dungeon hospital.
It's kind of like those like Christian hospitals that are yeah. in, like an abbey or something, you
yes
know, an old
definitely
abbey.
Which is like, how is this going to make anyone feel better? It looks horrible. It
well,
looks like
a bunch of people laying on the stone ground. And I was like,
right.
Okay. But I guess it probably was better than nothing.
Yeah. Than dying.
So she grabs this young hot doctor and he comes and she's just kind of like impressed with him from the get-go.
Mm-hmm.
He flirts with her. She flirts with him. He knows... one of the like heads at his hospital mm-hmm. knows the Prince Regent and told him right. that, you know, he has an in with Jane Austen, and the Prince Regent was like, oh my gosh, come let me meet you, and then you can, you know, oh well, I guess she has to go to meet him before she finds out. Well, that's a whole other scene. Okay.
This was another one where they jumped scenes a lot, kind of like Sanditon, so it was like,
yeah.
Okay, we're moving quickly.
Yeah. So she does go to see the Prince Regent, although she never sees the Prince Regent. She just sees his librarian. And it makes me feel like, yes. oh, the librarian was the one who really wanted to meet you.
Yeah, it feels like the librarian was like, oh, by the way, the Prince Regent would love to see her. And then, of course, she shows up and he's like, well, he's really busy. So I guess you'll have to stick with me.
Could you sign my copies?
Yeah. And isn't this where he was like, you know, it would be a good idea to dedicate the next book to him?
Yeah.
And she's like, for what?
Yeah. So, I mean, she actually does dedicate Emma to the Prince Regent, but she made it clear that she did not care for him in the previous scene.
Yes.
But at the end of the, they seem to have a lovely visit until the end where the librarian is like, you should write a book about a librarian.
Yes. And then I loved the transition to the next scene, which was basically her retelling this whole exchange at the dinner. And she's like, you know, I just played him like a fiddle. Like, I'm just a silly woman. I don't know anything about men's affairs and librarians, so I couldn't possibly have the knowledge to do that.
Yes.
And of course everyone is like, oh, Jane, you're such a riot.
Yeah. And her niece has come to visit Fanny, and the doctor is there, and they're all drinking, and I was like, oh, Regency tipsy people, you get a lot of that in the Jane Austen universe. But she is definitely intoxicated, and her 100%. Doctor is clearly infatuated with her niece, and she starts to feel jealous herself of her niece, or I guess just of like the situation. And she is a little upset that evening, although she does try her best for a funny quip and a rally, but
of course
you can tell she's kind of like over it. But you know
Jade is a great, like, I love the character, but she does have this quality where she kind of feels like she has to be the center of attention. So it makes total sense that she's like, well, why is she getting some attention? I'm the funny one. I'm the flirty one.
Yeah. Well, and they had such good rapport up until now that she was like, oh, you know, I feel like maybe there's
something
flirting going on, you know, some like reciprocation. And then her niece gets there and immediately it's like, oh, hot young thing.
Right. Like, she gets
another reminder that I'm a past my prime.
Right. I was about to say, she gets a little reminder that she's like, society and their obsession with youth and beauty.
Yeah.
Even though she's like not old.
No, not at all.
She's a, you know, very average, still probably very young woman.
I think she died when she was like 44, so she was probably like 40 at this point, maybe, because it was I don't know exactly the time frame, but it was like there within a few years of her death that we the movie was taking place in.
Yes.
So she goes back home again. And I think the next thing that happens is just she starts to get sick. She's like hanging out with Cassandra, and she's got a few moments of pain. You can tell she seems like more upset with the world.
Yeah.
I don't know. Does she start to get sick before her brother loses his banking business?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. She's already, they have like, cause she starts to get sick and it's like kind of really benign, like, you know,
seems like a little pain.
Yeah, and maybe some like light cold symptoms where she's just like, I don't really, it's nothing big, like don't worry about me. And then they have that, it's like was it a picnic or something? And then she's like kind of sitting by herself, like, and you could see her like shivering, so she's got like a fever. And
yeah,
this is where she has her kind of like her deep conversation with Hugh Bonneville's character, where he's like, you know, like, I wouldn't have told you not to write if we were married. Like, I would have obviously supported you. And she's like, it's not about that. I'm dying, but it's not about that.
I like this scene a lot too, because he's like, just assure me that you ever think of me. And she's like, why? What's the point? If I say yes, you're just going to feel bad, you're married. If I say no, you're going to feel bad in a different way. So let's just, you know, be friends like we are and we're good.
Right. She's like, let's not, you know, rehash things that don't need to be rehashed. Like, and she kind of makes it clear, like, it wasn't because I was worried you would stifle my writing or anything. It just wasn't the right fit.
Well, and she's like, I had already decided at this point, I don't want to be married.
Yeah. And it's like, I like this version sort of like putting forth the idea, whether it's, you know, accurate or not based on the information we have, but that she was just like, I don't want to get married. That's kind of point blank, like my decision for turning people down. And she's like, I just don't want to get married. And how could you fault her?
Well, the world seems to try, because at this point we just start pulling at the old heartstrings.
Mm-hmm.
First, her brother
right
comes in and tells her and her sister that he has lost his banking business. His other brother, who supports them, is like put up like 20,000 pounds for him.
Ugh,
as so collateral money. And so probably has lost that forever.
Uy.
He's very despairing. He doesn't want them to tell the mother, because he's gonna tell her himself. And I guess the next scene or a few scenes later, she has found out, and the way she deals with that is to completely berate Jane as if she was the cause of all of their problems, right? Because she didn't marry this one guy from the beginning. And I was like, woman, you could have married someone rich from the beginning.
That's
too.
What I said. That's what I said. Because also, Henry makes it very clear. He's like, this is my fault. I lent too much and I loaned and I took too many loans. He's like, I did not do banking responsibly, however that means. I don't know anything about that. But he's like, this is my fault. This is why I will tell our mother, because I will have to take it, because it's my fault. And of course, she's like, where is the nearest daughter that I can blame? Because it's always a woman's fault.
Well, except for the nearest daughter, she doesn't even bat an eye at. It's Jane who's to blame, for sure.
Of course, because Jane is the black sheep of the family. Cassandra lost
because
her husband.
She can see right through everybody, and everybody always knows that. So they're like, oh, she's laughing at me. Oh, she's doing this, because she can read you. She knows what you're, she knows.
Right.
Stop making her feel bad.
Yeah. Also, it's not a bad thing if people, like, it's not like Jane is laughing at you for malicious reasons. She's laughing at you because human nature is silly and society is silly. It's not about you. It's about what you're doing. But I just, like, this scene made me so angry, because I was like, I had the same thought. I was like, first of all, old lady, you could have married rich, but you decided to marry a vicar who didn't have a lot of money. So you put the responsibility on your children.
Right.
How responsible of a parent is that? Second of all, you got three other kids right here that could have done something. Two of them who are men who could do anything, pretty much.
Yeah.
But, you know, go ahead and yell at me. This is where I was like, she must be dying, because a true Sagittarius would have said some very nasty things back, as I was thinking in my mind.
Well, normally she does have like a good response to anything, but you know, I think when it's your mom and you've heard this from her and you're already feeling especially bad and sensitive, and during this whole scene also, her niece her niece had already also been a brat bitch.
The amount of explicatives that I was using throughout this whole like section, I was like, these fucking people, I hate them all so much. And except for Cassandra, because Cassandra does try and stick up for Jane, and her mom also snaps at her and is like, don't stick up for her like you always do, blah blah blah. And it's like, someone has to. Y'all just want to take from Jane. Jane's got to give her opinion on this. Jane's got to provide for the whole family somehow.
Exactly.
And not to mention, she is trying to provide for you guys by getting more money for her books, but her shitty brother is the one who is making her feel bad for that, because he can't provide for the family. So you got a lot of other children you should be yelling at first.
Totally. The injustice put upon our beloved Jane Austen.
Yes, leave her alone. This movie. And then what also, you know, Fanny got her just desserts when she like comes out after Jane leaves and is like, you like turned down marriage for your writing. That's so romantic, blah, blah, blah. And she's like, you know what? Don't even bother. Don't feel pity for me. Especially not you. And then walks away. I was like, oh, That's what you get for being a brat.
She's like, you can be mad at me, but don't you dare pity me.
Exactly. It was like, ooh, I love Jane.
Yeah. I can't even remember exactly the scene with Fanny and Jane before this. I don't think it really matters because we already talked about another version of basically.
Yeah. It was just basically like, you know, another person making their problems somehow Jane's fault.
Yeah. The Tom Hiddleston got engaged to another girl.
Yes.
So she blamed Jane.
Yeah, of course. Which is like, whatever.
Meanwhile, she's flirting with Jane's doctor. Rude.
Exactly. And this is what I'm saying. It must have been Jane dying, preventing her from having all of these retorts that she could immediately throw at them, because it's like, y'all can't even come for her because it's like so much egg on your face.
Yeah.
That she could just be like, what's that?
And I think this scene was really where I just started really crying, and I was like, why are you doing this to me, movie? And I don't think I recovered until the movie was over for a good five minutes.
Fair. It just wasn't fair. And then, of course, I think the scene after this is the scene we get of Fanny spying on Cassandra and Jane in the room, right? Where they're having their heart to heart. And that was very touching. And
yeah,
I wanted more of that.
Yeah, because that's where Cassandra was like, I'm the one who made you not accept the proposal. I like basically told you all night long after you accepted it to say, please don't, please don't, please don't.
Right. And she's like, listen, it's not your fault. She's like, it is what it is. Who cares?
Yeah. And also where we learn that Jane is like, the thing that makes me feel the worst is that I can't provide for you and mother. And it's like,
right.
Why is that all on your shoulders?
Right. Which I did appreciate the fact that this movie didn't take the turn of her feeling regretful about her romantic side of her life.
Yes,
it was like, I didn't give up my life to provide for you guys. But she's also like in her sickness delirium at this point. So it's like, you know, she's just, you know, in that very emotional space where it's like, you know, it's not your responsibility, Jane. But I know that you're taking it on because you're dying.
Yeah. She's sitting there dying, only thinking about the rest of you guys, and nobody is giving her, everybody's just giving her grief constantly. It's like,
exactly. It's, you know, it's the burden of the black sheep of the family. You've always are the very easy scapegoat for everyone's problems.
But I do, as a person who has been single majority of her life, and honestly, I can say for sure that I've been much happier for it.
I mean, you know, it's not for everyone, and for various reasons. And, you know, like, we're not ever going to get married, Josh and I don't think so. Like, it's just not something we really want to do. And, you know, relationships can look like anything. I mean, you and your sister have a very close bond. So it's like, you know, a romantic partner is not the end-all be-all for life's goals.
Yeah. Yeah. And I feel like you get to a certain point, probably like Jane Austen, and you're like, okay, I'm good.
Yeah. Where it's like, you know,
I'm not going to worry too much about this anymore.
Yeah. Where, you know, you've, and especially like you have this control over your life. You've had this control over your life where you've only had to, you know, in a sense, worry about yourself. And it's very comforting to only have to do that because you don't have to sacrifice as much for someone else and develop any sort of, you know, remorseful feelings or any sort of what's the word?
Well, I can't remember now. In that time period, and Jane Austen explicitly says it in the movie, by not being in a relationship, you keep your freedom to
exactly,
because otherwise you're owned by a man, literally.
Right. Well, and there was the whole I think there was a whole like part of the movie where Jane is like looking at, I can't remember, I don't even know who this woman is, but she has a baby.
I think it's another one of her nieces, isn't it?
Maybe, or maybe one of Fanny's friends. I'm not sure, but
I think it must be her niece because her mom was all like, oh, baby, my grand thingy.
Right. This is, we forgot to talk about this scene at the picnic where the baby is there and Jane is like, hey, I got you, you know, a copy of my new book. Like, I know you've been wanting to read it. And, you know, Jane's mom is like, she's not, you're not going to have time to read a book. You're a mother now. Hello.
She's such a rude ass mother.
Yeah, she's one of these, like, you know, just nasty old ladies who is just like, I can say whatever I want and be as rude as I want. I don't care. And it's like, well, you know what?
We know why Jane Austen wrote the mothers the way she wrote them.
Exactly. There is definitely some inspiration in her life.
At least this movie thinks so.
Exactly. But yeah, you know, and then there's this whole scene of Jane where she's like, thank God I didn't become a mother because I wouldn't have had time to write any of this stuff. I would have been burdened by motherhood.
Yeah. Yeah.
Which I can be like, I relate. I totally understand your what you're saying here.
Okay, so, well, at the very end of the last scene we were talking about with Jane and Cassandra and her niece watching,
mm-hmm.
Jane sees her and it's like, you're free to marry the, or I'm taking somebody. I don't, I feel like this was an inside joke that I somehow missed while watching the movie, but she's like, you're free to marry the widower with six kids.
Yes.
And we basically jump from there to her marrying the widower with six kids. And Jane dead. And yes. I was like, what?
I remember this. It was a scene very early on in the movie where Jane made a joke where she's like, the only guy who's going to want to marry me is a widower with six kids or something like that. And then that's who Fanny ends up marrying is a widower with six kids. But
which I had just read on the Wikipedia as I was like looking up all the different characters in the real life stuff.
Yes.
So I was like, oh, she married a widower with six kids, eh? Oh.
Interesting.
Yeah.
But yeah.
So Jane is dead, gone. Causing me to weep even more.
Mm-hmm.
Her mother and Cassandra are watching the wedding and her mom's like, Jane always got everything right.
Yep.
Which is why I didn't like her.
Because she was always right.
This widower must have been rich, though, because it was a very fancy, like, reception type of a after party thing. And Fanny goes down to a little cottage or something. And I don't know if this is where they lived or if this was a different place, but Cassandra mm-hmm. is burning Jane's letters, although this is like 2 years later, so very narratively convenient that she's burning all the letters at the wedding.
Right.
And this is, and she basically is like, Fanny's like, don't burn the letters. And Cassandra is like, you're just trying to find some secret relationship that isn't there. The truth is, the love of my life was Jane.
Yes. So, was my sister.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I totally like got the impression just based on how everyone treated Jane towards the end that Cassandra was burning these letters because she's like, you know, not only are these like very personal to me and Jane, but also like, you know what? People want to treat her like this. They don't deserve to get to know her because they're going to treat her the same way that her family treated her. And she was, you know, ahead of her time. And most people who do things ahead of their time are not treated well. So she's like, you know what? Fuck it. You guys don't get to know her.
And I think Jane loved to write a funny letter to Cassandra about like who she's mm-hmm. flirting with and all this. And she doesn't want people searching for some relationship that wasn't there or taking things out of context, you know, that
100%
were really just her being funny to her sister.
Exactly. Yeah, inside jokes. She's like, you know what? These will live forever in my mind palace.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And that was the end of the movie. Oh, sorry.
Yeah. Go ahead. No, there's that line where she's like, well, whoever the widower that she's marrying, I can't remember his name. She's like, he told me to come get you to dance. And she's like, Jane was the dancer, not me. Period. End of movie.
That was the end. And I was like,
it definitely was like at the end it was like you are going to cry or be upset.
I mean, it the last 15 minutes of the movie was like, let's just pile on the like clearly dying woman.
I know, I was like, y'all are yelling at a sick woman, and she is at this point like visibly sick. It's not like she's just coughing a little bit. Ugh, so rude.
Yeah, so honestly, it was so much better than Becoming Jade. It had so much stuff about her and like her personality that feels so much more correct to me than Becoming Jane.
Yes.
Not that it needs to be compared to it, but we just watched it.
Right.
But I would still say I probably don't need to revisit this movie. I just yeah, it was too heavy. Too much at the end, and I don't know how much of that is actually accurate, you know, like that seemed to be where we were taking the creative liberties, and I don't need you to take them in that way with Jane Austen. I want a good ending like she wrote.
Yeah, well, you know, it's this I feel like in this movie especially, the way she talked about like writing Vickers and other and giving her characters happy endings, because a lot of times like real life doesn't give you those happy endings, and she, it just feels like a lot of times we don't want to give that same respect to her story, and we want to give her this tragic ending or tragic point of her life where it's like, you know, why can't she just have a normal life? Why can't she just be like, she just got sick and was just like, well, I wrote my last book, I'm dying. I'm well, just going to be happy with my sister.
When people die too young or when people die at all, but we don't really have to end her story with her death. We could. Right. But I did appreciate the way it wasn't so much like, oh, her life is so sad because she was single. Yes. It was more like her life was sad because everyone kept reminding her that she was wrong for being single.
Right. I am. Yeah, I would be curious to see, like, you know, what would a version of her life be like where, you know, maybe not everyone accepted the way she lived her life, but maybe more so we're like, well, that's how she wants to live her life. We'll just let her do that, I guess, and mind our business.
Yeah.
that's my soapbox for this movie. Everyone minds their business. Leave Jane alone.
Stop being so judgmental. And if you want to be, don't tell her to her face, for God's sakes.
Exactly. Yeah. Be a proper British person and talk behind her back. That's what everyone in England did back then.
Then she could just laugh you off.
Exactly. And then she could just make fun of you behind your back. Or to your face.
If you get it.
If you even get it.
But yeah, I did appreciate it, but you know, I think that's all we really have as far as Jane Austen movies. So still waiting on the perfect Jane Austen biopic.
Who knows?
If you're a screenwriter out there, there's a golden opportunity.
Exactly. Come on, give us the perfect one.
Yeah, give us the perfect one. One in which we don't end in tears or feel sorry for her for being alone and focus on her relationship. Her non-relationships the whole time.
Yeah, why don't we make a biopic that's from her point of view, where she's just like, I like my life. I like the choices I've made.
Yeah, I mean, we can have the sad Bath moment, but you know, she was still going to parties at Bath.
Exactly. Well, that's where we started, and she was just like, even the little comment we got about Bath, she was like, ugh, I couldn't be there any longer, even though I had fun. Yeah, exactly. She's like, I need to be in a cottage to write, and I understood that.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Okay, yeah. Well, that's it for today.
Yeah, if you don't know why I thought that. We need some uplifting. If you would like to send us your opinions on this movie, or even Becoming Jane, and which one you liked better, just because you did them back to back, you can email us at mannersandmadness@gmail.com. You can DM us on Twitter @mannersmadness or on Instagram and Threads @mannersandmadnesspod. Or you can leave a 1-minute voicemail on our website at mannersandmadness.com.
Yes, probably email or Instagram would be the best because those are the only two I actually check. Although if you write me on Twitter, I think I'll get a notification and know. So
yeah. Yeah. But you know, let us know. Who knows?
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. This wraps up the Jane Austen portion of our real life segment, but we still have one more David Lynch movie, and that is Lucky, and we're doing that next week.
Yes, I'm very excited.
Me too. All right, good night.
Thanks for listening. Bye.